Thanks, Dave.
Morning, everybody.
I'm sorry it's me again. For a variety of reasons beyond anyone's control, it's meant I've been on several weeks running, so you're not getting the variety you deserve. But do not panic. Next week, I will not be here, so whatever happens, it won't be me. So great, we're nearly there. So yeah, welcome, and welcome if you're in the forest. Anybody over there? You're very welcome. It's lovely. These flowers are left from the wedding yesterday, which is great. Thanks to those of you that helped with that. And John and Catherine, who are relatively new to the church, but they had a great day. And they chose fantastic weather in a couple of days that are awful. So they were very fortunate and blessed yesterday. So thanks for those of you that helped with that. So as Dave has said, incidentally, it's great to see James leading. I think it was the first time this morning, was it? Yes. I'm confident that will not be the last time, but it's great to be here on the first time. We can all say now, when he's famous, we were there the very first time James Ling ever led in church. Fantastic. Thank you, James and team. So, as Dave has explained, what we're doing over these summer Sundays are kind of a short series, really, of talks, thinking about who we are as church. Now, that could sound a little bit introverted, so just let me set that in a bit of a context for a minute as I get going here. You may remember, some of this is kind of revision for many of us, but you may remember that the very existence of the church owes its genesis. It starts with the Old Testament story of Israel. When God got hold of a man called Abraham and gave him an incredible life commission, he said to Abraham, this unknown Iraqi, "I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." And that last two lines are the most profound and deeply significant two lines, perhaps in the Old Testament, for what it means to be church. Because what that alerts us to is that in God's heart to call together a nation of people called Israel in the Old Testament, but his heart was not really to make them great. His heart was to flow through them to make the nations blessed. Israel were called together as God's people for the sake of the world, so that all peoples on earth will be blessed through them. That is so important to remember when we think about our identity as Christians, as church today, that we're not here for our sake. We're here, we're called together in order that something can flow through us to the rest of the world. We're supposed to be here for the good of others. And that theme gets repeated through the Old Testament. In Isaiah, for example, in one of the modern versions of the Bible, it says, "I'm setting you up," God speaking to Israel, "I'm setting you up as a light for the nations, so that my salvation becomes global." Now, that's a modern translation of a verse. But the idea there is, again, that God kind of gets hold of a bunch of people and so lives with them and transforms them that somehow, not that they themselves just feel better, or that's a good thing, I'm up for feeling better most days. But that betterness, to coin a new word, overflows into offices and factories and houses and neighborhoods and streamlies and wherever else. We go. We're here for the good of others. So when Israel kind of blew its commission, and Israel consistently failed to be the kinds of people who bore God's blessing and goodness into the world, they became a bit of an embarrassment, frankly, so that actually God had to remove them from that status. They became a light that was extinguished. They turned the world into a dark place, not a light place. God sent his Son, Jesus Christ, 2,000 years ago, to embody everything that Israel was to have been for the world. So everything that Israel was supposed to be in terms of a blessing to the wider world, God condensed into the life of this one man, Jesus Christ, who said, famously, "I am the light of the world. It's in and through me that now the goodness of God will flow into the rest of creation." He took the place that Israel should have taken in bearing God's blessing to the world. But almost immediately, he kind of flicks a switch and reverses the flow. So we've gone from a big nation down to one person, but instantly we go from one person out again into a new nation, because he turns to his disciples, those that follow him, those that claim to be his followers, and says to them, "You are the light of the world, like a city hidden on a hilltop that cannot be hidden." This is now your identity. This is your mandate. This is your calling to be a gathered people for the sake of the people who are not yet gathered. To be together for those who are falling apart. And so the church has its existence in this calling to be a distinct, unique group of people which you join through baptism and faith. And you come into this bunch of people, not just so that you have now got a ticket to heaven, but so that actually your life can join with other lives in showing the world what life could really look like if God was allowed to be king in his own world. So here we are. All of us, different shapes, sizes, colours. Church, living with this Old Testament identity reaffirmed in the New Testament by Peter, Jesus' friend, saying to the church, you now are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession. You've got this specialness about you. You're not just like everybody else. There's something different about you because you've chosen to follow Jesus Christ. But this is the reason that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light. You're not called together for your own sake, you're called together for the sake of everybody else. There's some good news that they need to hear, that life doesn't have to be pointless and depressing and stressful and selfish, but you can live for different reasons and you can live under a different God and you can live a different identity. And the way that the New Testament tries to help us understand those different ways of being is through a range of different pictures, a range of different images, metaphors, if you like. Some of the metaphors are family metaphors, that the church is a bit like a family. The church is a bit like a household. A church is a bit like a bride. Some of them are agricultural metaphors. The church is like a plant, like a vine. It's like a field. It's like a flock. Some of them are corporal images. The church is a bit like a body. Some of them are architectural. The church, as Paul's going to graphically and thrillingly illustrate next week, is like a building made of stones. Do not miss next week. No all-age services had more preparation that's gone into it than next week. I'm just sad I'm not going to be here, but I'm going to get the video. He's been away all week just preparing. You think he's been on holiday? He hasn't really. So some of the images are architectural images. The church is a bit like a pile of stones all built together into a temple where God wants to live. And there are one or two even martial images. It's a bit like an army and we're all soldiers of Christ. So the church never really gives us a real theological definition, if you like. The New Testament never gives us a real theological definition, but it says it's a bit like this, it's a bit like this, it's a bit like that, it's a bit like this. And that's what we're doing this summer. We're thinking about those things that we're a bit like. In order that we can understand and remind ourselves, because a lot of this won't be new to many of us, but to remind ourselves of our identity. And particularly with that thought that who we are is who we are for the sake of others. What does it mean to think of these different images, not just for our own sake in here, those of us that might call ourselves church or Christian, but what does it mean to be like that for the sake of others? What do we want other people to taste and experience when they come across God's people? And this morning, as you, if you haven't already picked up on this, then you have been seriously asleep this morning, thanks to Dave's creativity and imagery and so on. This morning we're thinking about that New Testament image of us being a bit like sheep in God's flock. And Dave's already put this reading up. I missed this, that he was going to do this, so here's a little bit of repetition, but I don't apologize for it. Right back in the Old Testament, Psalm 100. Famous. I nearly played a video. I thought Graham, where's Graham? I heard Graham's voice earlier. I thought Graham would appreciate the old 100th, but I didn't put it on in here. So anyway, shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It's he who made us and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. There's the metaphor buried back in the Old Testament, 700 years or so before Jesus came. The idea that God is a shepherd and we're his flock. Psalm 23, the most famous psalm perhaps in the whole Bible. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. We're going to sing those words later. The idea, the imagery is right throughout the Bible of us being like sheep in God's flock. And as I reflected on what that meant, a few sort of different thoughts came to me. The first being, not a very flattering one. Because sheep, in my observation, are pretty stupid. To think of myself as a sheep in God's flock enforces on me a certain amount of humility and honesty. Sheep are pretty irresponsible, stupid creatures. They need dipping in chemicals every so often because they're prone to pick up lice and other nasty things. I came across this video online which shows just how stupid sheep can be. It's called the Sheep Cyclone. Why? There's no reason. Why? Sheep are very human. We're prone to do stupid things. We're prone to wander off and get lost. We're prone to kind of pick up things here and there. We're prone to let one another down. We're prone to all kinds of stupid, irrational behavior, which even we get embarrassed by and ashamed of sometimes. And that's okay, because we're sheep in God's flock. I'm so glad that we're not all head boys and girls in God's school. You know, the goody-goody two-shoes. Sorry, if you were one. I'm going to take that back now. But there's a certain humility and honesty that's forced on the church, because sometimes as church we can pretend that you're welcome here if you've got it all together. You're welcome here if you'll never let us down. You're welcome here if there's nothing wrong with you in body, soul, or spirit. In other words, we want people that kind of toe the line and always have it all together. But something about being a sheep makes me think, at least, it's okay to be here and run around in circles irrationally sometimes. There's a very famous passage in the Old Testament in the book of Ezekiel where God talks to the leaders of Israel, the kings who were leading Israel, in the terms of shepherding. He recognizes that the kings of Old Testament Israel were a bit like under-shepherds. They were supposed to be shepherds of Israel, and they consistently got it wrong. And in Ezekiel chapter 34, you'll find some very harsh words that God, the great shepherd of his people, addresses to the under-shepherds, the kings and the leaders of Israel in his day. And amongst those words are these. These are the reasons that the kings of Israel were criticized. You haven't strengthened the weak. You haven't healed those who are ill. You haven't bound up the injured. You haven't brought back the strays or searched for the lost. When I read that, I thought, well, I can see the great deficiency in leadership there, but I'm still thinking of this idea that even within Israel, what that points to is not everyone had it all together. There were the strays, the lost, the sick, the people that were kind of struggling a bit, the people that were kind of going off on one, and they were still part of God's flock. They needed special care, they needed looking after, but it's okay to be in that condition. It doesn't put you outside of the flock. You can be a sick sheep. You can be a stupid sheep. And maybe you are one. Maybe you have been one. Maybe you're married to one. Why did that get a laugh? If your husband or wife just laughed, be concerned. But you can see the point I'm making. I find this quite a liberating metaphor, because it allows a range and a diversity within God's people that some of the other metaphors perhaps don't sharpen quite so much. It's okay to be like that and to be within God's family. Sheep, however, can also be very dangerous. I don't know if you've ever seen a dangerous sheep, but here's one. Sheep can be very dangerous. Now, I'm glad I came across that video on YouTube, because years ago, Myrtle and I were on holiday in Wales, which, as you know, is 90% sheep. And we were walking across a deserted hilltop, and there was a flock of sheep. Now, as most of you now know, I was brought up on a farm, so generally I'm not afraid to walk through fields of animals. But we were walking through this particular field, and there was a very nasty-looking sheep. And Mel said, "It's only a sheep, they're fine, they just walk away." I said, "No, that one's got a nasty look in its eye." I said, "I'm not going across that field." She said, "It's fine, honestly." She said, "Don't be such a..." Yeah. So I said, "No, I'm not going across there." So anyway, we walked a little way, and this thing started moving towards us. So I said, "No, I'm not going across." So we turned and walked back. And Myrtle's never let me forget that incident. When, you know, when you go to parties and when you talk to people, one of the anecdotes that will come out at some point is the time that I ran away from just a sheep. Now I have video evidence that on that day I probably saved both of our lives. Will she say thank you? No, she won't. She'll still tell the story, but you've seen the video. And I'm going to recruit you onto my side. Now you've seen the video. Should she tell you the story? We've seen evidence. Anyway, so sheep can be very dangerous. They can be nasty. They can be horrible. They can really bully other people. That passage in Ezekiel 34, again, says this. I hope it says this. Does it say this? Oh, okay. No, you've seen all those. I'm pressing the wrong button. You've seen that. You've seen that. What you haven't seen is this. Sorry, I was pressing the wrong button. "As for my flock, this is what the Sovereign Lord says, I will judge between one sheep and another, between rams and goats. Is it not enough for you to feed on the good pasture? Must you also trample the rest of your pasture with your feet? Is it not enough for you to drink clear water? Must you also muddy the rest with your feet? Must my flock feed on what you've trampled and drink what you've muddled with your feet? Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says to them. See, I myself will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep. Because you shove with flank and shoulder, butting all the weak sheep with your horns until you've driven them away, I will save my flock and they will no longer be plundered. I will judge between one sheep and another." Sheep can be nasty. Sheep in God's flock can mistreat one another. Sheep can perhaps intentionally, often unintentionally, hurt one another. And so I find this metaphor a very real metaphor. I was at the wedding yesterday, at the reception afterwards. There's a couple that I know well who are a youngish couple who've been horrendously hurt by a church they used to belong to. And they're not currently going to a church because they can't just bring themselves to go back and they can't trust themselves again. And it really hurts, doesn't it, when you're let down by people who you thought were for you and should be for you. That can happen in the flock. I often say this, it's not whether or not those sorts of things happen, it's how we react when they do happen. Sheep sometimes will turn on you. I have evidence, both from Wales and on video, and from Scripture. What more do you want? You can get hurt being in God's flock. And maybe some of us here have been in that position where we've been hurt. Because we know that instinctively, the flock of God should be a place of kindness. It should be a place of generosity. It should be a place where we're cared for. But it should also be a case where when people do let us down, there's accountability in place. God calls the fat sheep, who are butting the small sheep out of the way so they can get their noses in the trough first, he calls them to account. He says, anyone is welcome here. That's true. But it's not true that anything goes here. Anyone is welcome, but it's not true that anything goes. There are some things for which we need to be held to account. I need to be held to account. Because within God's flock, when other people look, when other people experience, when other people taste what it's like to be part of God's flock, we want them to experience kindness, not rejection and headbutting. And so there's an accountability that has to be in place in the life of God's flock, which means that it's a safe place to be. Everyone is welcome. But not anything goes. And we need to be a kind of people that are willing to tackle things that are perhaps difficult when we get into situations where we're beginning to let God down in the eyes of the world. So that's my second thought. Stunningly, in that passage in Ezekiel 34, way back in the Old Testament, remember, when God has criticized the shepherds, you haven't looked after the weak, you haven't looked after the injured, you haven't brought back the strays, you've actually tolerated one abusing another, the fat sheep have bullied the lean sheep. There's only one recourse to that. You've blown it so often. This is the answer, God says. This is what's going to happen. I myself will tend my sheep and make them lie down, declares the Sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. But the sleek and the strong I will destroy. I will shepherd the flock with justice. Those prophetic words buried in the Old Testament are almost the very words that Jesus himself picked up when he came and said, I am the Good Shepherd. When he told stories about himself as the one who had come to go and look for even the one lost sheep. This passage was what was in Jesus' mind. This identity as God himself coming to shepherd his people is exactly what Jesus was drawing on when he said that this is now God coming to draw his people back together around their rightful king. When Jesus cared for the outcast, when he healed the sick, when he opened the eyes of the blind, this was God coming to do for his flock what the previous kings had not been able to do. Jesus came as the good shepherd, the true shepherd. And so when people come into God's nation, what we would expect people to hear is lots of talk about Jesus. And lots of confidence that actually when God is king, then good things will happen here. We will see the eyes of the blind open. We will see the captive set free. We will see the injured cared for. We'll see that because Jesus is now kinging it in his flock in a way that previous generations of his people hadn't experienced. Now, we don't always receive Jesus' kingship. We don't always understand it in the way that perhaps we might. For example, you know the story of the blind man whom Jesus healed by spitting on the ground and rubbing mud on his eyes. Now, just put yourself in the position of that man. You cannot see what's happening. You can just hear someone approach you, spit, and then you feel some hands on your face beginning to rub mud on your face. You probably don't instantly interpret that as wonderful good news. Sometimes Jesus' methods in dealing with us are very strange. That lovely video clip that Dave showed at the beginning, the bound-in one, that was worth the entrance money alone, wasn't it? What a good morning we've had. A great video clip. But when the sheep was wrenched off for his first shearing, he had no idea what was happening to him, and he resisted that. He didn't realize that if he didn't go through that process, he would be the poorer for it. There was something he had to let go of, lose, in order to be healthy. There is a story that's told of a sheep who came to be called Shrek, who managed, like the sheep in the video that we saw, to escape the shearers. He was so terrified of being sheared that he escaped and lived in a cave for 6 years. And here's a picture of him. He'd accumulated 60 pounds of wool, enough to make 20 suits, apparently. The sheep became so famous that he even got to meet the Prime Minister of New Zealand. I thought it was one of the cabinet, actually, but I don't know. Maybe. But you see, we can fear sometimes what Jesus asks us to do, letting go of stuff, obeying him in certain ways. We can say, that doesn't make sense to me. I'm not sure that's a good thing to do. Just like a sheep saying, I'm not sure it's wise to submit myself to a rugged New Zealander who's got a pair of clippers in his hands. Who's going to turn me upside down, hold me by my legs, put his knees in my back, and shave me. This doesn't seem like a good idea. I'd sooner hide in the cave and become even more infested with fleas than I might have been. Even more incapable of movement than I might have been. And sometimes there is a case where Jesus speaks to us and it doesn't make a lot of sense. We know it's his voice, but it doesn't make a lot of sense. We can't quite see where that's going to lead, where that's going to take us. And one of the things that should happen in God's flock is that Jesus should breed a great confidence in us to actually risk it. I'm going to submit myself into his hands. I'm going to do what Jesus wants me to do, even though it doesn't make a lot of sense, because I trust that he is the good shepherd of the flock, and he is the one that knows how life works. And if he says it's a good idea for me, well, it may seem a bit like someone rubbing mud on my eyes or tipping me upside down and attacking me with a pair of clippers, but I'm going to trust, because he's the shepherd and I'm just the stupid sheep. And if he says go, I'll go. If he says stop, I'll stop. So, this first image, this first metaphor of the flock of God gives us a number of insights into what it means to be a church for others. A place of humility and honesty, where all are welcome. Even the broken and the people that run around in circles with no possible explanation for their behavior. A place of kindness, where we actually go the extra mile to help one another, to bless one another, to give, and so on. But also where we're willing to be held account when we actually begin to exhibit behavior that lets God down. And a place where Jesus is named with great confidence as the loving shepherd of this flock who will never let us down. First image. There'll be other images, and I'm sure other ideas that will flow from them. But as we follow them through this summer, my hope and prayer, and those of us that are speaking, our hope and prayer is that very much that we'll be just refreshed in who we are and why we are who we are for the sake of the world. So let's bow our heads and pray, and Dave's going to come back and lead us on, and James and others. Father, I thank you for calling me into your family, and many of us here would want to echo that and say thank you that you haven't left us like orphans to wander through this world, not quite knowing why we're here or where we're going, but that you've given us a sense of identity and security by calling us into your family, into your flock, as it were. And I pray, Lord, for those of us here this morning who may be all too aware that we at the moment are a pretty sick sheep. We're struggling. We're running around in circles. We're lost. We're wandering off. I pray, Lord, that you would speak tenderly and clearly to people in that situation, and you would enable us as a people to be tender with one another when we're struggling and not quite finding our way as we might wish to. Make us a people, Lord, that are generous and kind, where we're willing to be accountable. But above all, make us a people of great confidence in Jesus, the Good Shepherd. A place where we actually believe he's here. A place where we believe that he does stuff and good things for us and through us for others. So Lord, refresh us this morning in who we are in you, the great flock of the great shepherd. I pray in your name and for your sake. Amen.